Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Generex Biotechnology Corporation shareholder conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded, and it is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Anthony Krishe. Please go ahead.
Forward-looking statements included in this presentation are made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These statements relate to future events or to our future financial performance and involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause our actual results, levels of activity, performance, or achievements to be materially different from any future results, levels of activity, performance, or achievements expressed or implied by these forward-looking statements. In some cases, you can identify forward-looking statements by the use of words such as may, could, expect, intend, plan, seek, anticipate, believe, estimate, predict, potential, or continue, or the negative of these terms or other comparable terminology. You should not place undue reliance on forward-looking statements because they involve known and unknown risks, uncertainties, and other factors that are, in some cases, beyond our control and that could materially affect actual results, levels of activity, performance, or achievements. A more detailed description of these and other risks and uncertainties may be found in our annual report on Form 10-K and other public filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. If any of these results or uncertainties materialize, or if our underlying assumptions prove to be incorrect, actual results may vary significantly from what we've projected. In any forward-looking statement you read in this presentation reflects our current views with respect to future events and is subject to these and other risks, uncertainties, and assumptions relating to our obligations, operations, results of operations, growth strategy, and liquidity. We assume no obligation to publicly update or revise these forward-looking statements for any reason, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. Now I would like to turn over the call to Joe Muscato, President and Chief Executive Officer of Generex Biotechnology Corporation.
Thank you, Anthony. Good morning. Myself, the Generex management team, and the board of directors would like to thank you for participating today on Generex's shareholder conference call. We have announced the agenda, which includes our new venture, NuGen Health, which is a 50/50 partnership with a healthcare technology company in the remote monitoring for diagnostic home use. This transaction closed yesterday, and we are quite excited about it, and we'll give more details later in the program. We also signed an MOU with Malaysian partners for up to $150 million in potential revenues for our vaccine development and manufacturing for the country of Malaysia. In addition, we signed a letter of intent with potential Chinese partners for up to $400 million guaranteed in our vaccine development program and revenue streams once we get approval. Also, we were contacted by the Canadian NRC last week from working with Health Canada the last 6 months, and they informed us they want to move ahead in moving our vaccine forward for Canada. We now look forward to those discussions in the coming days. Also, we signed a strategic investment and acquisition LOI. The investment is $20 million. It will be an upmarket deal. It's a strategic investment, and we are acquiring a diagnostic business with that $20 million for $10 million for a 51% stake in that company. This call also includes an update on the AltaCell acquisition, and we'll give a brief summary and answer all questions at the end of the briefing on all other areas of our business and subsidiaries. Now, I'd like to inform you that Generex is in quiet period because of our newly filed S-1 for financing of up to $14 million that we 8K'd 2 weeks ago. So I am limited to what I can say as it pertains to forecasting values, financing initiatives, appraisals, or revenue assumptions. Thank you for understanding this when the question and answer format starts at the end of this briefing. So I'd like to go to our first area of the agenda, which is our FDA response to our pre-IND package for our SARS-CoV-2 vaccine that we submitted about a month ago. We got our response, I believe it was 2 days ago, and I'd like to turn that over to Rich Purcell, our head of research and development, who will give a synopsis of that package response from the FDA. Rich, please.
Thanks, Joe. We received this response from the FDA when we put our pre-IND briefing package in last month. They gave us a very detailed response, and to tell you the truth, we're very happy with the response. They've agreed to our... specific detailed recommendations to include in the protocol, but they haven't changed the protocol. Minor elements of diagnostic evaluations of the immune system that we'll include now, and also a couple of inclusion and exclusion language. But overall, the protocol design has been approved by the FDA, and we're quite pleased with that. We do not have to do any toxicology work, and that is a major step that they've declared that no additional toxicology work is necessary. The adjuvant that we're working with, this is 3M's 052 adjuvant, is in clinical trials, and we're able to reference that clinical trial to allow that adjuvant to go into human clinical trials with us. So that's a very good positive result as well. Overall, we have immunogenicity trials, inclusion criteria to use in our evaluation of the clinical trial participants in healthy subjects. We have to define the immunogenicity of the vaccine when we get our final formulation. So overall, a very clear direction from the FDA and a clear path forward.
That's terrific, Rich. Thanks. And I'd just like to reiterate, yeah, it was a great response from the FDA. We've been involved in many, many responses to the FDA, and this one, I have to tell you, is one of the better ones that I've seen. So it was a great job by the whole team. I'm very proud of the work they put forth to the FDA with our partners, PPD Worldwide, as well as some of our research centers. So it's fantastic news, and now we have a clear path getting in the clinic with our vaccine once that is completely developed. So I'd like to move on to the news that we announced today, which is our 50-50 partnership with Worldwide Digitech, which we formed NewGen Health, which is now a subsidiary of Generex. And I'd like to introduce everybody to Dr. Naveen Goel, who is now our 50-50 partner and is the owner of Worldwide Digitech. Dr. Naveen, please, I would love for you to comment on this new partnership.
Thanks, Joe. I'm very glad to be part of this new organization and help transform healthcare for the benefit of patients. As you know, patient engagement, remote patient monitoring, and management have become the cornerstones of exciting new approaches to preventative, accountable health care. With the launch of NewGen Health, we will be able to enable provider organization to put this exciting model of innovation into practice. So I'm very, very excited and privileged to be part of this organization and looking forward to it. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Naveen. So this partnership here for us, since COVID has started back in late January, and became such a demonstrative deterrent to pretty much all business in the United States, we've had to rethink some of the areas of business that we're in and how to be like a chameleon, so pretty much, and adapt to putting our infrastructures in place that are in place to good use. So here, we're going to introduce this program through our different distribution channels. Arizona, our partner clinics in Arizona, utilizing their their doctors and their patient populations for this program. And I'd like to get a comment from Sanjay Kumar, who is running our Arizona operations and one of the Generex management team members. Sanjay, if you would, I'd love for you to give a little bit of color on what you've been able to set up in Arizona, the breadth of the partnerships that we have there, and the patient populations where this program can immediately start giving real results, not only for the doctors, not only for the patients, but for Generex's income streams. So yeah. Please, Sanjay.
Thank you, Joe. As you are aware, that Arizona is the third largest Medicare market in the country. I've been working in setting up our provider network for the past 4 years. I've had tremendous experience in this area. I've worked with Dr. Patel at WellCare and other subsequent HMOs. And as everybody is aware, Dr. Patel is the leader in the industry when it comes to Medicare HMOs. Currently, we are partnered with four large primary care clinics, actually three primary care clinics and one endocrinology, probably one of the largest in the country with 14 endocrinologists under one roof. With these four providers, they have close to 50,000 Medicare recipients active. The key word is active in their practices. And they are willing, excited, and ready to go. And I believe just with these four clinics, which are our initial beta site, and then we will spread out to Florida and California, but we will first beta it with these clinics in Arizona, and then take it to our MSO also, which Generex has in Oklahoma, Texas, and four other states. I believe just these four clinics should make us one of the market leaders in the country. And I think I'm very confident that we will be one of the top four or five remote patient monitoring companies in the country. I'm pretty confident about that. And with that, I won't take much more of your time. And I thank you very much.
Thank you, Sanjay. So this program that we're about ready to launch, you know, we had initially looked at many, many remote monitoring companies. And why would we do that? Well, you know, right now it's all about telemedicine. It's all about remote monitoring because of the pandemic situation and because the federal government as well as states now have put in big dollars to be able to take care of patients from a home setting. So we jumped into this business. Why? Because we have the patient populations, we have the doctor partners, and we have the networks to get this program up and running. And it's probably one of the better programs we've seen. Dr. Naveen and his team have put together an excellent program, probably one of the most sophisticated systems we've seen, one of the more friendly, user-friendly GUIs and applications for the patient, as well as the diagnostic equipment that's given by the doctor to the patient after education to use at home so the doctor can monitor the patient and provide the necessary care and benefits to those patients. So we're pretty excited about this program. Our infrastructure is set up. Dr. Naveen and team did a fantastic job in building out his whole infrastructure. And it's a perfect partnership that we believe we can get up and running very quickly, as well as really start revenuing with this whole program quite quickly. So I'd like to move on now to some of the vaccine deals that we've put together and that we are working on, which will substantially change Generex for the better moving forward, give us the necessary credibility in one of our platforms that $50 million has gone into plus over the years. And we're finally starting to get recognized for our vaccine work in infectious disease, primarily with our development work in SARS-CoV. So we last week we signed a LOI for a guaranteed $400 million if our vaccine is approved in China with Chinese partners. Once we're working on the contract now with their lawyers and our lawyers, and we believe that we will have this contract signed with a $5 million upfront payment. They will pay all of the work in China, everything, the clinical trial work, the manufacturing, and then getting it through the approval process with the Chinese FDA, which then we would receive a $20 million success fee and then a 20% or a minimum of $2 per dose, which gets us to that guaranteed $400 million initially. So it could be much higher, but as of right now, they're guaranteeing, if success, at least $400 million in revenues to Generex on a royalty stream. So we're very excited about that. We believe that we're working hard to get those contracts done. The big thing there is to get that upfront payment of $5 million, make it real, which we believe will occur the day of the signing. That's what we've negotiated, and our Chinese potential partners are right now eager to get to work. So quite excited about that program. The next program that we announced was our partnership with Bentai Kinder, a Malaysian company in the infrastructure and engineering space that will build out manufacturing facilities for us in our partnership to manufacture the vaccine for the people of Malaysia. That deal calls for on contract signing, which, as a matter of fact, tonight I have our final call to go over the final details of the contract. That's a $150 million deal, up to $150 million. We get $2.5 million on contract signing, which will be used to further develop the vaccine. And then they pay for all the costs in Malaysia to further the vaccine through their Malaysian FDA, get that approval. We get a licensing fee of $17.5 million, and then vaccine royalties of $3 and $4 per dose distributed to the Malaysian people. So we're very, very excited about that program and that partnership. We believe that that'll be signed within the coming days, and we'll get our first $2.5 million on that signing. So we'll be able to further along our vaccine, which is been difficult for us because we're a small company and we need that assistance and those are these partnerships to make this work. And we're just very happy that we're starting to get that recognition and we're able to move forward with what we believe will be one of the better solutions for COVID. So our next agenda item is we were notified last week from Canada that after an extensive Canadian review and over 60 submissions from companies, and we've been working with Canada now for the last 6 months with the Health Canada, we were turned over to the Canadian NRC branch of government, which we were notified they want to move our vaccine forward for helping Canadians. It's in the early stages of discussions, and we're confident of a successful partnered outcome. So, we put extensive work in with the Canadian authorities over the last 6 months. We've worked with their FDA. We've worked with their Health Canada to make them understand what the opportunity is and what our solution fully can be expected to do if successful. We believe we will be successful, and we're very proud to be working with the Canadians as well as providing a real solution to the Canadian people. That deal was consummated by Generex Pharmaceuticals Canada, our wholly owned subsidiary, and that's where that work will be done, as well as our Chinese partnered contract. That also will be done through Generex Pharmaceuticals Canada. So we're very excited about the new developments in the countries and the partners in those countries believing in our pathway and us providing a real potential solution for this pandemic. So that's those are the big items that were on the agenda. Obviously, I'd like to give you a quick update on AltuCell. We're excited about moving that forward. We're quite thankful to Gary and his team at AltuCell for hanging in there with us. But our big goal is to get that acquisition done. And I'd love to turn it over to Gary to give an update on what AltuCell is, because they've been moving forward beautifully with their programs. And I'd even love to hear all the great things that Gary's been doing. So, Gary, if you would, I'd love to hear an update on all your developments and appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. So basically, everybody has gotten a little bit of a pushback or a big pushback from the pandemic, and all eyes and ears are on the vaccination, as we can all appreciate. However, we still were following our process of getting all of our, you know, regulatory stuff in place. We are in the process of execution of Lerone study in South America. So we're just waiting for the ethics committee to sign off and give us final approval. We have all the insurance and all the material necessary that are required in place. We have a human study in Italy that was pushed back, obviously, because of transplants put on hold. So our team in Italy have gotten all the approvals with the government over there. So we're actually, right now, we're being informed that we're given a date when we can execute the human trial. This will be the first in the world to demonstrate our encapsulation technology using these human islet cells to reverse type 1 diabetes. So we're very excited about that. And having the fact that we spent 2 years getting the approvals was a big stepping stone, monumental stepping stone for the company. We're also working in-house with scaling up our encapsulation technology, because we have been pinged by many companies out there, whether it be academic institutions or commercialized companies, to utilize our encapsulation technology. Simply from the standpoint, we feel it's probably the best in the world, and the fact that we have 5 years of human data to support it. So we're really in good shape with that, and that's one of our goals, to create a revenue stream also with our encapsulation technology. So we pretty much got a lot on the plate right now, and we think that we're making some nice progress in spite of what's going on, you know, across the globe. But we think we're in pretty good shape, and we're looking forward to continue to move the studies along accordingly.
Thanks, Gary. I really appreciate the update, and can't wait to consummate it and finally close AltuCell. And now we believe, and we'll get into that a little bit, you know, how we're going to close it, and you know, and all the new developments in the financing space, which we'll get to. So I'd like to move on to one of our other agenda items. We have strategically partnered and signed an LOI with a Texas-based diagnostic company. That company has its emergency use application in right now for COVID testing, which we believe they will get. The technology is probably one of the best out there that we've seen. That's also another business that we can move through our doctor networks, as well as utilize this with their patient populations for testing. The company also is synergistic, not only in infectious disease, but in cancer diagnostics that they're working on. And strategic LOI we signed with them and their fund that's been funding them That fund will fund Generex $20 million in an upmarket deal that we're working on. And $10 million will be utilized to acquire 51% of this diagnostic company. It's something that, it just synergistically fits perfectly with both of our main platforms, cancer and infectious disease. And we're quite confident that all three entities, ourselves, Generex, the diagnostic company, as well as the fund, wants this to happen, and we're working right now on contracts to make that happen. So we believe in the coming weeks, all of these agenda items will have a positive outcome. There's no guarantee of that, obviously. Still negotiations to be doing, and they're ongoing until final contracts are signed. But we're quite confident that all parties involved in any of these transactions are highly motivated to get these things done with Generex. So very proud of the developments that we've been able to put together, as well as, kind of change our business a little bit based upon what's going on today, in the world with this pandemic. So we're quite excited about it all. And now I'd like to give some updates on where we stand with our existing businesses. I'd like to turn the call over now to Tony DeLisi. Tony is CEO of Ola Region. And as everybody knows, that company's been somewhat devastated in regard to, the effects of what's been going on throughout the United States with the pandemic, as, good luck wouldn't bear. We got our federal contract on the VA hospital system, as I'm sure everybody's aware of, back in late March. And unfortunately, the VA hospitals, I believe except 20 of them, are all still closed down for any of these types of services that Exelligen could provide benefit with. So, Tony, I'd love for you to give an update and what you and the team have been doing during these very tough times that we're all facing.
Absolutely, and thank you, Joe, for the introduction. As Joe put it, we were awarded by the SAC. The SAC is the Strategic Acquisition Center of the VA. We were awarded a BPA contract in late March, a biologic blanket purchase agreement contract, which gives us the ability to conduct business in all 165 of the hospitals that are associated with the VA. In addition, the clinics that are out in the communities, there's over 1,000 clinics that we have potential access to now. This contract is really coveted and awarded to very few organizations. Prior to getting the contract, we were working within the VA and select hospitals to run the pilot clinical studies that were needed, as well as get ready for case presentations that could be submitted along with the BPA contract to the committee, the value analysis committees, for this analysis. With that, COVID hit and the VA's shut down, all elective surgeries were shut. They are beginning to reopen very slowly. One of the issues the VA has with reopening is that these clinics for elective surgeries, they're small, and the waiting rooms are small. And many of these patients are handicapped and cannot walk, and they're brought in wheelchairs for the most part. So several people, a loved one, a caretaker, have to bring these patients to the clinic. And with the spacing that's required, they're only going to begin opening at 25% capacity in order to be able to accommodate the patients. So we've not been able to fully take advantage of the contract as of this point. What we've been doing in the meantime is we've been working with Rep Solutions, which is an organization that supplies representatives. It's a recruiting organization, and we've been getting ready for the gear up. We've interviewed well over 80 individuals. We're probably going to move forward into the VA initially with 12, but simultaneously we'd like to launch into those clinics within the VA, those 1,000 clinics, as well as some of the podiatry offices that do surgical procedures out of the office, because we did get our Medicare coverage as well. So with those things said, we've been diligent in recruiting, hiring, screening, interviewing some top sales representatives, including representatives that have called on the VA system for one pharmaceutical company or another, many of them in the wound care space, but they're now currently retired and looking for 1099 contracts. So the relationships are in place, and they know their way around the VA systems, how to navigate, and they have relationships that are strong with many of the surgeons. So that's where we've been. We look forward to the sort of relaunch as this COVID scenario dissipates, and we're very excited about the potential opportunity within the VA hospital and some of the clinics that we're going to launch into.
That's great, Joe, Tony. Thank you very much. Thanks very much for the update, Tony. I'd like to also get a comment, if I would, from Jason Terrell, Chief Medical and Chief Scientific Officer, on the acquisition that we will be making on the diagnostic space and how that kind of fits nicely with our own diagnostic business we own today. I think hearing from Dr. Terrell and his synopsis on what we'll be acquiring, as well as how that fits nicely in our business model, I think would be great. So, Jason, if you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Joe. We are very excited to have this opportunity to partner with AIMA Bio. They truly have a fantastic team of lab professionals there and are setting up an amazing operations and laboratory facility. And importantly, their lead product is the AIMAgene COVID-19 diagnostic test, which I consider will become the best, most preferred diagnostic test on the market. And this is perfect timing, as Joe said, because it entirely complements and supports our COVID-19 vaccine development program and the large clinical trials that we'll soon be conducting. And this test is so unique, I'd like to take just a minute to kind of explain the test and the opportunity that it will provide to us. It's called the AIMAgene 2019 Novel Coronavirus Detection Kit, and it's a nucleic acid-based real-time polymerase chain reaction, or RT-PCR test, and it detects nucleic acids of the SARS-CoV-2 genome. It's unique in that it has a wide variety of different specimens that it can be used on. These include oropharyngeal swabs, nasal pharyngeal swabs, nasal and turbinate swabs, also nasal pharyngeal washes and aspirates, as well as bronchial alveolar lavage specimens, which is more than the typical standard test can be used on. And in addition to the standard collection processes that are currently being performed in hospitals, physician offices, satellite clinics, and drive-through facilities that we see popping up, AIMA will be providing FDA-approved home-based sample collection kits. And this is among the fastest and most important future sources of COVID-19 testing. So with the broad range of specimens they can test, with the broad access to the different means and methods of collections, I feel that AIMA is perfectly positioned to capture the maximum number of tests across the full spectrum of collection methods. And what makes their lab unique is that they're using, you know, cutting-edge, top-of-the-line devices for nucleic acid extraction and automated PCR testing. And this provides really three things: improved accuracy, improved turnaround time, and a very high test capacity. When we talk about accuracy, all nucleic acid PCR tests that are FDA approved are highly accurate, and most of these, by the WHO and CDC standards, require detection of two genes that are expressed by the virus. The AIMAgene actually tests for four. And as expected, in the clinical studies that we've seen to date, it has outperformed all the other similar tests. And this is important, obviously, because higher accuracy means fewer false positives, fewer false negatives, and ultimately better care, better outcome for the patients. They also have an advantage in speed testing turnaround time. With their new reagents and advanced lab systems, they can turn this test around with under just a few hours of analysis time. This is a big improvement, and it's important because, you know, faster reporting means faster diagnosis, it means earlier initiation of treatment, and again, better care and outcome for patients. And lastly is their testing capacity. This facility in Texas will be able to perform 1.4 million tests per month. And that's astounding. And for context, the entire U.S. is performing, you know, slightly over 20 million tests per month. Texas alone is performing more than 2 million per month. And we know that the current testing capacity overall in the healthcare system cannot meet the current demand for tests. And importantly, in the future, as students return to school and employees return to work and restrictions are eased, we'll undoubtedly see a major increase in the demand for tests. So AIMA is here positioned to absorb a very significant portion of all of these tests that we'll be faced with in the future. And as Joe said, they've applied for FDA emergency use authorization. Their submission packet is as strong as it could possibly be, and I expect to see approval in the coming days to weeks. So with that, Joe, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Jason. I really appreciate that. So I'd like to now get an update from Regentis. Rick, are you on? Give an update, please.
Yep, Regentis Corporation is 11 strong. Our company is a regenerative medicine company focused on the development of a novel hydrogel to treat different forms of irritable bowel syndrome. And we have found that our focus market is going to be on ulcerative colitis with a view toward Crohn's. We continue to continue development in the drug. We're hopefully finalizing our formulation very shortly with help from the University of Pittsburgh and Stephen Badalak and his team at McGowan Institute. We have a view toward the clinical trial starting in Q1 in Australia under the direction of Tom Sperotti, who's a well-recognized global leader in the GI space. We have Stephen Wexner, who is our chief medical officer and has provided some great direction on the development of clinical trial applications in alternate locations, including Israel. So our short-term play is to continue our development, get ourselves in a position to initiate clinical trials. Obviously, the COVID thing has slowed things down, but the extent we're able to move that forward, we're doing that as quickly as possible. And we're just optimistic. Thanks.
Thanks, Rick. Appreciate the update. So I'd like to make a further comment. So, you know, with our vaccine work that now is starting to catch fire with partners and countries, and we are in discussions with other countries, as we've announced before, we believe that more and more we'll see the benefit and the real potential solution with our vaccine work. And we believe that, you know, in the coming months, there's no reason why we couldn't get a couple more big partnerships on the table. We are in discussions with a few other countries, and we're hopeful that occur. Now, also, I'd like to just update everybody. We just recently heard from BARDA, and BARDA, we were deficient in a couple of areas which we knew about, which is our protocol for FDA, which now we've put that package in, the pre-packaged IND package in. We've gotten our responses from the FDA. It would have been nice to have that in there. So that was an area we were deficient in, as well as, because we're using the 3M adjuvant. At the time, we didn't have any safety data on that or any of the testing preclinical data. So We were able to get that from the NIH and a reference letter for that adjuvant prior to our submission, our application submission. So now we have that. We have that approval to use the reference, which was included in our FDA package, to utilize all their safety data that the NIH is conducting in clinical trials with that adjuvant. So we plan on getting our testing back on the bloods that are occurring right now, getting those results, and then adding that as well as now the protocol, the FDA response, and the cross-reference letter from NIH and HHS to that application that we have submitted to BARDA. And we're hopeful that once we resubmit, that we will be totally compliant in all of the areas for working with the U.S. government and getting a grant. So we're excited that we're able to move this forward and get all the necessary, needed additional information required from BARDA, and we will be resubmitting at the appropriate time. So I just want everybody to know what's going on there at BARDA. And now I'd like to turn this over to Terry Thompson, give you his view on what we're doing on the overall operations. And Terry, if you would, I'd appreciate just giving an update to everybody.
Thanks, Joe. Yes, we are working on all the assets that we've talked about on several calls before, including all of our MSO and the Arizona operations kind of fit together with that. So we're trying to, as soon as we have their funding come in, we're going to be launching not just Arizona for what Sanjay was talking about earlier and Dr. Naveen was talking about, but we can expand this beyond the Arizona footprint to five states that we currently have an MSO structure in, as well as other states that we can go to as fast as we can keep up with it. But I think we've got good products and services on the surgical side from our Medisource Pantheon company. We've got good products from the new remote patient monitoring and chronic care management that we can roll out, and also the ophthalmology and podiatry business that Sanjay's referenced going forward. So we're accumulating, and the Acceligen product as well, which is very sought after within all of our surgical suites. So I think between COVID and funding, we've been a little stagnant in getting that rolling, but that's exactly what we intend to do from the very beginning, is to get this rolling out. Now we've got products and services that make a lot of sense, and I think it could turn into a really big operation for us down the road here shortly.
Thank you, Terry. Appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's pretty much it for the update. You know, we'll keep everybody posted as we move forward with all these new initiatives. We, you know, on the agenda, there were six items. We were able to close one with Dr. Naveen yesterday, and we're hopeful and quite confident that all the others, day by day, will be closing, and we can start immediately getting back to business, as well as proving out our vaccine technology. So it's a very exciting time, and I'd like to open it up for calls to our shareholders. So if you would, we're ready for calls, for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touch tone phone. We do ask that you keep it to one question and one follow-up question before requeuing for your next question. Once again, that is star and one to join the question queue. And our first question comes from James Molds. Please go ahead.
Hello, Joe and the rest of the team. This is James Molds. I'm a private investor. My family and I have committed to Joe's vision for this company for many years, so we're really excited to hear a lot of your initiatives and thankful for the work that you guys are all doing during this time.
Thank you.
My question, though, is not just blowing smoke in your direction. I do have a little bit of a question.
Sure.
And keep in mind this is coming from a perspective of a root cause analysis and corrective action, which looked at fixing systems and not blaming people. We've had a couple incidents in the past, and I'm speaking of things like Veneto and then some of the bad actors that have sold shares before we thought they were able or allowed to sell shares. That's obviously had a bad effect on us and our your initiatives. What new systems and corrective actions does the management team have in place to strengthen our contract review process so that we agreements that you're working on now?
Well, I mean, I appreciate that question, and I think that, you know, we have, you know, we work with many major law firms, quite good at what they do. You have a seasoned team here that understands this business just as well as anybody. But again, just like Bernie Madoff was able to rob $65 billion right underneath the nose of the regulators, their investor lawyers, and other bad actors out there. When people want to lie and defraud you, they figure out ways to do it. So we had all of the necessary safeguards in place, from due diligence to actual language in the contracts. Let's look at Veneto. Veneto swore and attested that there was no criminality in anything that they had done. When we got to those parts of due diligence, their lawyers were on the phone with our lawyers, and those attestments were taken seriously. In the contracts that we signed with Veneto, there were call-outs for if the federal government did bring charges criminally against them, which you know, they attested to. So, you know, these things will happen. It's unfortunate that it's happened to us. But, you know, if bad actors want to do something illegally or want to get around something, they figure out how to do it. And, you know, between using Veneto again, hiding behind attorney-client privilege, you know, and again, we were only buying the assets. We even had the former U.S. attorney in Texas give an opinion on us buying those assets. And, you know, would there be any ramifications on us for the federal government? So we did everything proper. We set forth criteria to safeguard those, though we now have to litigate, which we're doing. And you're right. You know, they're, when you're talking about stock, that's why I made it. So that's why none of us here at Generex has ever sold any stock since we've been in charge, because you know, it's the Wild West. It's OTC, and people try to take advantage at all times. Most companies can't defend themselves, and you know, we have many litigations that are going on right now because we're not going to put up with it. We have settled many litigations in the past month. So you'll see that in our coming K. But again, we're not going to take things standing, you know, sitting down. We're going after Veneto. We're going after all the other bad actors. And we believe we'll have a positive outcome at the end of the day because we've done everything properly. And, you know, again, you could put in all the safeguards you want. Someone wants to defraud you, they're going to do that.
Dustin Fredrickson, please go ahead.
Hello, Joe, and hello the rest of GMBT company. Thank you so much for all that you guys have been doing. I've been a GMBT stockholder since 2009. I think you're doing a fabulous job turning the company around. My question is, with all these vaccine things that you guys are working on as a company as a whole with the subsidiaries and everything, do you guys look to give a dividend to the stock shareholders in the near future once these things come to fruition?
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, you know, I felt from the day I took over the company and its management team was put in place, we all felt it very important to take our shareholders with us, especially, you know, after the storied past that Generex provided the shareholders. You know, we wanted to give back. We wanted to do the right thing by shareholders. I think we've done that. We've given out dividends in the past. They've hurt us because the dividends that we've given, I don't think that the regulators really knew how to handle these types of dividend that we did. It's held us up to an extent at certain times because we were giving back. You know, we didn't benefit from the dividends. The shareholders did. So we tried our best at doing that. I think we're going to concentrate now on, you know, doing our business, getting relisted back on the NASDAQ eventually after that good business is done, getting our spin out listed, which is New Generex Immuno-Oncology, which we're working on. And then we can start thinking about giving back once we build out the businesses and we can concentrate on the tasks at hand. But again, if the past any indication on our appetite to give back to shareholders, I think we've done that and demonstrated that. If we can do it in the future, I'm all for it. Right now, we need to build this business.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Question comes from Doug Jones. Please go ahead.
You lack accountability and leadership. This is a joke.
Should it?
All right. He just dropped from the call. Our next question comes from Tom Curtis. Your line is open.
Hi. Congratulations again on moving forward with the COVID vaccine and everything that's happening there. It sounds great. I had one question. I noticed that in Malaysia that there was a new version of COVID that was recently either discovered in Myanmar or Malaysia. Is that the same COVID infection in both those countries, or is it different in those countries?
Well, I'm gonna let my science team answer that, but I can tell you this: it is a brand new strain. I believe there were 23 nucleic acids in that strain that are different than the original COVID that's all over the world right now. It's come from, I believe it was India or one of those countries into Malaysia. But it is a completely different strain. The patient that they tested twice, once in March with the original strain, and then this new strain just recently. And they did test it, and there's two separate strains. Maybe, Rich, you can add some color, maybe Jason.
Sure, I can address that because our peptides that we've focused on, we haven't looked at the exact sequence of the Malaysian virus right now, but the peptides that we've chosen for analysis in our vaccine are conserved regions of this coronavirus that aren't likely to mutate because they're required for binding to the ACE2 receptor. This region, the spike protein that we've targeted with our epitopes, should be able to cover any of the strains that are emerging right now because we're targeted on conserved regions of coronavirus that bind with the ACE2 receptor. Now, and we're linear, and the linear peptides are activated as well. The other thing is, if there is a mutation in the virus that we can target, we just make new peptides with IIT on them, and we have an addition to the vaccine, and it can activate very quickly. That's the beauty of the IIT technology. If there's a mutation, we can identify that mutation, determine if it's a neutralizing mutation that we could generate an immune response against, and then rapidly develop the IIT epitope peptide vaccines to target the strain. So that's the beauty of our platform technology.
Thanks, Rich.
And our next question comes from Gerald Snell. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, you guys. How are you?
Very good, thank you.
Good. Yeah, my name is Jarrell, and I'm a shareholder also. My question is in regards to the news that we have acquired a couple of new companies, and I wanted to know how those purchases were made. Were they made with cash or share trades? Did we take on debt to borrow to take on those new companies? And I just kind of wanted to get an overall synopsis of what our debt to profit or P&L total is looking like right now with those purchases.
Well, if you take, it's a good question. If you take a look at Generex's balance sheet or the last Q, it's about $32 million, if I recall, in debt. So, I hope people don't realize that that is debt that we owe for doing services or, legal or, a very small percentage of that is for operations. The big debt that we have are on the businesses that we acquired, like Regentis. Regentis, we owe them about $13 million to further their product through the FDA and to get approval. Ola Region, we're contracted when we acquired that business. Now we own 100% of that, but we still owe the company about $8.5 million. So that's recorded on our books as debt, though it's internal debt to our subsidiaries. And it's good debt because we're either furthering commercialization with Ola Region, or we're furthering the clinical trial work to get approval for, say, Regentis. So the new acquisitions, AltaCell, there will be a cash payment, and then as well as furthering their trials along. That will be done through equity, which we will, now that we were able to get through our 10-month comment period on our Form 10-K, last year's annual report, the SEC vigorously went through extensive comments because of the intricacies of all the things we acquired, the last 2 years. Everything from analysis on appraisals for assets we acquired to, formulations and structures of how we got to these numbers. So, that held us back considerably. It also, when you have comments on an annual report, which were extensive like ours, that took, 8 months to get through, though we filed S-1s, those S-1s would never be approved until you're cleared of the comments on that K. So we were cleared about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago from the SEC, which is great. Now it paves the way for all of our financing initiatives. It was literally impossible to do any financing while you're going through an extensive comment period on, say, an annual report. We got through it. It was very costly as well as very, very time-consuming. And that set us back at least a good 8-9 months. So we're confident now that we have a clear path to getting the financing necessary to further our own company sciences, our own company's commercializations, and then the acquisitions that we have slated moving forward. And as I had said earlier, on the diagnostic acquisition, they come with a fund who invested in them. That fund will be doing an upmarket deal in equity with Generex for $20 million. It's a strategic investment. and $10 million of that $20 million will be utilized to acquire 51% of that business. So there'll be greater detail in how we're financing things moving forward now that we can, because we're finally cleared with the K. Those will be coming to full fruition in the coming weeks, and we will be announcing the details as they occur.
Question comes from Kukuravilla Krishan. Please go ahead.
Kukuravilla Krishan.
And your line is open.
Oh, okay. I have a couple of questions that are nothing. I'm not criticizing anybody. Whenever we hear the conference call, we think that this is the company, is the best company on earth, but the share price still remains the same, and we are doing so many good things. Why don't we wait until we get some solid information, get some money, and in the beginning, I remember seeing that we're getting $1 million from Chinese company, then $40 million. Now it is $50 million, two companies going public. Nothing happens, and the share price remains lousy. And meanwhile, the company sold shares for $2 million. And why is that? Why don't you wait until some solid things are there and do the conference call? What's the purpose of having the conference call? Everything is rosy, nothing happening with the share price. If something is good, it will reflect on the share price.
Well, that makes no sense, because we just waited 9 months while we went through a whole review to get to a position to raise money. So 9 months, nothing was done, because we were in a deep dive with the SEC on our last year's annual report. So to stay stagnant doesn't get anyone anywhere, because I can attest to that, because we just lived through it for 8 long months. So, you know, the only option available to a company when you're in a comment period on, say, a filing is convertible notes. We just cleared out all of them. That is a big factor as to why stock price stayed where it is. I'm glad it stayed where it is. So, because we really didn't get too hurt from when we did our last dividend. Our last dividend, we were auto-adjusted to 43 cents. So as of right now, though stagnant, we cleared out about $5 million in debt, convertible note debt, and it didn't hurt us or bring us lower than where I awarded all of our shareholders in a dividend. So though we haven't gone up, we haven't gone down. We're still above where we were auto-adjusted when all of our shareholders, including yourself, got awarded by the company those additional shares. So we won't do any more convertible notes. It's something that I just won't do anymore. We had no choice while we were suffering through the wait period of this extensive review by the SEC. And now we're moving on to the next level, which is to get our S-1s finally approved. So it's necessary, and that's what we're moving on to do. But I can assure you that 8 months, 9 months of being stagnant because we were unable to raise money was certainly not any big benefit.
Roger Iqbal, please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking time. Good morning, sir. First of all, congratulations. I know your leadership style. You are, first of all, a great leader. And I am your one of your stock holders. But I took basically on pandemic, I took my money out of 401k. When I saw your portfolio and stuff like that, and basically your name, you are running the Generex. I bought basically GNBT shares. So I'm confident that this will be a big, huge success. And Joe, only one few suggestions I have. I know you have a great leader out there, Terry Thompson also. for operations. He has done a great job before in some great companies. Now, Joe, you mentioned a lot of different moving parts Generex is working on, you know. I'm not going into the detail. Have you guys found out what are the immediate assets we need to utilize? Because this is the moment for Generex, I would say the time, because COVID is not going to be there forever. That is for sure. This is a great opportunity doing human good as well as introducing technology and services. In your case, I would say operations, expanding the operations for pharma industry. So are there any steps you have in mind next? I would say, you know, there isn't a time for waiting for a year, 2 years, because competition is so high. You know, you see the company like Serenitos, it was $20, it is going to be $8 or $5, because there is no guarantee. There's another great company out there. What I'm saying is that in next 90 days or 2 months, do you have any plan? You want to take few assets, basically, which will immediately have a good impact. You know, market will know about it. That will increase the share price. And it will have some kind of an immediate revenue generating vehicle it will become. Not much, hundreds of millions of dollars. At least it will spark that process.
Well, you know, listen, I believe that the most important thing that we needed to do from day one, that was literally out of our hands, is to get through the SEC comment process on our 10K. That delay cost us substantially on moving forward our business and our subsidiaries' businesses. And then our overall plan, which is to uniformly, cohesively, and seamlessly put all of these pieces together and build this enterprise. So now that that's over, we can concentrate one of the most important things, which is to raise the necessary money to get this organization revenuing in all of the different areas of business that we have. And we believe that that's going to be the next paradigm in getting to the next level, not only in our stock price, but in our business development. But the key here is, you know, when I look at, and I'm not going to badmouth any of the other pathways for COVID. But, you know, let's look from before COVID started. There is not one RNA, not one mRNA, not one, well, let's look at those two pathways. There are none of them that have any substantial data that's significant or positive in anything that they've done prior to COVID. So they jumped in with their platform technologies, like we did, and made a big push for the vaccine race to be a solution for COVID. I wish them all well. I hope that they're all successful, because we all know that the world needs it. But I do believe that we offer up one of the better pathways to giving a real solution. And as far as we're concerned, the only solution is not antibody. It's going to be long-term memory. And we've proven just in our breast cancer trial alone that we give 10-year memory. And that's the key. That's the area that no one's talking about. And nobody has data in their platform in any application that shows anywhere near the kind of data we have on long-term memory. So is that one of our big advantages? I believe it's one of our real big advantages, especially in the vaccine race. So I believe we get, you know, the partnerships, the upfront monies in, the contract signed on the announced potentials today, one Malaysia, two China, three Canada, we get those up and running, we get those monies in and the contracts become real, I can assure you stock price will go up. And most certainly, we believe in what we're doing. We believe, you know, in our technologies, and we believe that we're going to be one of the last guys standing as a real solution to what's going on. So I think that's going to be a big value driver in the next couple of months for not only the stock price, but for the overall business. So proof will be in the pudding in the coming weeks and months. But I believe once we have all the money necessary to prove this vaccine being, you know, one of the better solutions, it'll be pretty obvious to stop rushing.
And our next question comes from Marvin Luxbeiser.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
I'm a new shareholder with you. I joined on February, and we just wanted to know what kind of COVID are you working on, and what the other thing is, why don't you work with like a bigger company like University of Pittsburgh or University of Maryland or a big institution that you can get more tests and everything, and they have more of it than everybody else does. The other thing is, when do you think the possibility you'll be able to return to NASDAQ? Because all your stock is doing, it's going down. It was $1.50 and now it's 40 cents a share.
Okay, well, let me take the first question. So if you see by the AKs we filed as it pertains to COVID, we have partnered with big institutions. We've partnered with Wake Forest. We've partnered with Tufts University. We've partnered with Mount Sinai, Albert Einstein, as well as UC San Diego. So we've partnered with big institutions that can help us in our development and the work that needs to be done to bring our vaccine to the world here in the United States, as well as other places that we're right now hopefully going to get these contracts on it. So that, you know, has already been done. As far as stock price, again, you know, we were on pause because of the extensive review by the SEC on our last year's annual report, which we cleared finally within the last 2 weeks. We got our letter saying, thank you very much, we are cleared. So that put everything on a standstill in being able to raise money. During that process, when it first we first got this extensive first comment letter from the K back in, I believe it was January, at the same time, we did our dividend. That dividend, we gave those shares to our gave those additional shares to our shareholders, and we were auto-adjusted to 43 cents. So just like because of our inability to raise money, because we had to get through our K review, our stock price stayed stagnant as well. So I don't know what our price is today, but let's say it was 44 cents. We're exactly where we were with our stock price as when we gave the dividend. So not only has the business been stagnant, but the stock price has been stagnant. But for sure, the price didn't go down from when we did the dividend and finally paid it. We also would like to see the stock price go up. But again, because we had this extensive review, we had to take convertible notes. We needed the money. We took those convertible notes. And there's been a lot of downside pressure, not only from the convertible notes, but through other things that we acquired with stock over the last 2 years. We believe that that's coming to an end, but I think we've weathered the storm pretty well. But again, we'd like to see it go up just like you would, and we're going to be working hard to get that done. And now that we have the ability to take in real financing, not convertible notes. We believe we'll have a real good opportunity to get that done.
And our next question comes from Guy Banks. Please go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear you? Yes.
Hello?
Yep.
Okay. Yes, yeah, so I'm also an investor, and I wanted some clarity on your contract that you have for China, Malaysia, and I think Singapore, or you said Canada. It's like, what are the steps that need to be taken so that those contracts become reality? Because that's the big question for me.
Well, two of them, Malaysia and China, right now, our lawyers are working with their lawyers, and they're putting together the final contracts and technology transfer licenses. It takes time. These are extensive documents. And so those are being worked on, and we're quite confident because of how far down the road we are with the legal process that those two transactions will close. As far as Canada, we were just notified that they'd like to help us further our vaccine for the Canadian people. They turned us, from their, as they explained it to me, over their 60-company review, they picked a few to work with their coveted NRC branch of government. So we are scheduled to do calls with the NRC and their folks. We have been assigned a handler or a our own agent from the NRC that we report to, and that will be setting up this initiative to help us further the vaccine for Canada. So that one, I don't have any real answers yet until we get the full scope of how we're partnering and how they're helping us, which we will know within the coming days. But as soon as we know, we'll announce. We try to be as communicative as possible, good or bad. So we'll let you know.
And our next question comes from Scott May. Your line is open.
Hey, Joe. Good to talk to you again.
Hey, Scott.
So obviously so much hinges upon revenues and capital here. And, you know, obviously the big one is the NGIO listing. And the big piece of that right now, at least, is COVID. And it appears that the peptide and convalescent blood testing is the big piece of that that we're in now. So back when you signed the original China deal, there was a time frame in there that showed each of the tasks. And I believe that task was shown as a 2 or 3 week period. And we've kind of been at that stage for quite a while. Is there any update you can give us as to where we are in the completion of that, or?
Well, we've moved the II key peptides to CTL, one of the big labs that we partnered with, as well as the University of San Diego, which their Infectious Disease Institute is doing the assays for any of the off-target potentials that all these vaccines potentially could give patients. So, unlike most, we'll know all of that information, you know, way ahead of going in humans, where the others have to do humans to get that information. So it's in the process. In that first Chinese agreement, it was clear that as part of the contract, and we have that accused, there was upfront payments that they had to give us. They did not comply with those upfront payments. We held in there. Of course, we were focused on the U.S. and other parts of the world to get this done. And to date, they still haven't paid us. which is, you know, not part of, not something we're used to, because we do have a Chinese partnership, and we licensed our prostate cancer vaccine, and they paid us. So we had no indication that we wouldn't get paid from this group. We didn't get paid the upfront piece. They signed that contract. And, you know, we were hopeful that they were always going to get us the money. So, you know, and unfortunately, we couldn't go out and raise the money unless I did convertible notes. And, you know, they're just terrific to do. So we've been bootstrapping it. We made a lot of headway. We spent millions and millions of dollars to date and committed millions and millions of dollars for this vaccine work. I mean, Jesus, just the application alone costs, just to write it, well over $250,000. So everything is very costly. We've made a lot of headway, but we've done it, you know, with not a lot of resources. So we believe that with these new deals that we're working on, that will come to fruition, we'll have all of the necessary dollars to, you know, get this vaccine done and to have a real good result, you know, because of this money.
And once again, that is star and one to join the question queue. And as a reminder, we ask that you keep it to one question and one follow-up question before requeuing for more questions. Our next question comes from B. Thompson. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Thank you for having this call this morning. Appreciate all the input and all your efforts over time. I just want to ask, since it has not been asked yet, I believe, and you mentioned it, Mr. Moscato, regarding the BARDA application, do you start all over with a 90-day review, or do you just submit what you are missing?
Well, you see, I'll give you a little color on that. So obviously when the pandemic first came down, we were in touch with the U.S. Government pretty quickly. I even went to Washington twice, met with HHS officials and other government officials. And so as we were going through the process with BARDA, it was pretty extensive. We, you know, task force that BARDA had at the time, it was made up of DOD, NIH, DARPA, MTEC, HHS, FDA, and other government agencies. So, you know, every call that we had amongst teams, their team, their task force, and Generex team, you know, there's, you know, 60, 70, 80 people on each call. So, you know, it took us a while for us to educate them on our technologies. You know, we had to discuss with them all the work we've done in the past. So it was pretty extensive review, back forth. And I got to tell you, the great folks at BARDA helped us tremendously in developing what we have today by all the hard questions, all the inquiries. So we really defined that program quite well with BARDA and that task force. And then we hired the necessary folks to help us through that process, which are ex-BARDA guys, a few guys that worked for Emergent that did a fantastic job in getting us getting that application in. But just like anything, you know, once you know, it became more and more companies getting in the vaccine race, and now as they've gone through trials, I think from being very loose in trying to get stuff done to now more stringent because of all the other opportunities that are going on with other companies' development. I think, and then I think with the advent of Rick Bright leaving and then Warp Speed getting being put in charge of all the vaccine work, I think that had a lot to do with you know, them wanting more from us. So it really works. My belief in the beginning was that it was a work in progress, put your application in. I mean, we were told by the BARDA task force, we were responsive. We were told they wanted it, they needed it. They have nothing like this in their pandemic portfolio, so please put your application in. And then everything happened with Rick Bright, as well as Operation Warp Speed being initiated and a lot of the vaccine stuff being taken from BARDA by Operation Warp Speed. I think they just wanted more information and us to fill a lot of the holes that we thought we would be working with them hand in glove in parallel track to get those things that we were deficient in. But we have them all covered now. We've actually gotten the two big areas, which is FDA and the adjuvant we're using, safety data, which we have now. And once we get the convalescent blood and the assay testing completed and get those readouts, we will include all that in our existing BARDA package and resubmit.
And once again, that is star and one to join the question queue. We will pause a moment to allow questions to join the queue. Our next question looks like a follow-up from Scott May. Please go ahead.
Hey, Joe. It seems like the call is being run in a sense that they're turning us off as soon as we finished our question. So we're not really, like, the reason people aren't responding to you is they're not there anymore and they've been put back in the queue. So I don't know if he says that's how you wanted the call run. If not, maybe somebody could let him know to, you know, let us stay on the line to have the complete the question with you. So it seems like my question about the peptide.
I answered your question. Go ahead.
Well, I know, but we have no chance for a follow-up, and we're not, you know, we can't even say thank you when we're done. So anyway.
It's just the way it's set up, buddy. I'm sorry.
All right. So it seems like you're saying that the initial China deal kind of put a hitch in the blood testing, and we're back on track there. So I guess I'm wondering, you know, where does this go as far as the NGIO listing? Where are we, you know, when will there be an F-1 put out? I mean, obviously there's a waiting period after that. So are we waiting for things? Are there hurdles for that we're trying to clear?
I'll give you more information than probably anyone else would. So, you know, we filed our Form 10, and I believe you guys have the right to know. I mean, typically companies don't give this kind of information, but we filed our Form 10. Our Form 10 is effective. And then we got comments on the Form 10. Right now we are responding to those comments back and forth with the SEC. And once those comments are cleared, then we will put in our S-1. But you have to understand something. It's not the company that's not moving forward. As soon as we have the ability to move forward, we move like lightning. Most people in the know would know that, you know, financial experts, someone on Wall Street, when things take a long time, it's never really the company. It's more than likely going through a comment period. And that's what we've been going through. The SEC is here to protect shareholders and to go through and understand, you know, all the things that we've done in the last 3 years. So we also extensive comments on the dividends that we've given. You know, no one ever gives those types of dividends to shareholders. So that was unusual for them, and they needed to understand that. So we've done a lot of unusual things. We've done a lot of things that are shareholder-centric. Have we paid the price in time? Yes, we have. But have we cleared these intervals of comments? Yes, we have. As of right now, it's something we've had to live with. NGIO will be listed on a national exchange, whether it's NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange. I have no interest on listing it anywhere else. We know that we fit the criteria for a listing, and we believe that we will get there. But the SEC has got to be done with their work. Not our work, it's their work. So once they're done clearing the Form 10 that we filed months ago, then we'll file an S-1, and hopefully we won't have to go through extensive comments like we've been going through. And if that goes well, we're able to raise the money to get the going concern off and get that listed on the NASDAQ. So it's never us. It's something that's in our way. But surely it's nothing we've done wrong.
Basically, you're still responding to the Form 10 comments from the letters that the SEC posted.
Pretty obvious.
Okay.
What else could it be?
Well, it could be that you're waiting for peptide testing. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's why I'm asking the question. So,
why would that be a hindrance on listing? We're a late stage platform with great data, as evident by our 10-year phase 2B.
That's why I'm asking the question, Joe. I don't have the information, so I'm asking the question. Yes. For all I know, you want to wait till the perceived value in the market has gone up, or I don't know. So,
nope, not at all.
The Form 10, and, okay.
Oh,
great.
If it was up to me, it would have already been listed.
If it was up to us, it would be as well. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. So, yes, thank you.
And our next question comes from Thomas Scald. Please go ahead.
Hi, Joe. Just a quick question. You briefly touched on the peptides, and I just didn't know now when we might have a realistic phase 1, phase 2, phase 3 time. What's the realistic timeline for that now? Now that I think we have a little bit more information, can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, I mean, the timeline, the amount of time it takes us to, you know, that we originally gave, if you just, you know, count the numbers, you know, the months, that's realistic, and that doesn't change. You just need to have the money to get it all done so you don't get paused, you know, in your development. So whatever it was 6 months, 8 months that we initially had from, say, January to by September, then, if, you know, once we're fully funded and we can close these two big vaccine deals and have the money to further it and not have to pause, then, you know, it's the same amount of time. So our hope is to get these two big transactions closed, contracts being worked on, get those upfront payments in, and then we can able to focus with those dollars on getting this thing done quickly, and as quickly as we said before.
So we're looking at, I don't know, February of next year, I guess?
Rich, why don't you comment on this? This is your area, and Rich Purcell has been spearheading our effort on all fronts with this. And, you know, the great thing with the FDA, and like we've announced, right, so we even had a question about that in our comments with the SEC, you know, as evident by our response from the FDA, which we're very pleased with, they also said we don't need to do animal toxicology studies. That's about a six-month process, right? We said that from day one, that we didn't think we had to do animal toxicology. Plus, it does take a long time. And we never had to do it before in any of our other programs other than in the very beginning. So we knew, I mean, we know exactly what needs to be done. And the nice thing is, on that particular point, the FDA did agree with us on that. So, Rich, maybe you can add a little color. Rich, with us?
And I do apologize. It appears Rich's line has dropped from the call just a second ago.
Okay. Jason, maybe you might want to add a little color to the question about vaccine development time. Jason, you with us? Jason Terrell still with us?
No, the call dropped, but I'm back. I'm back. I apologize to everybody. The call. Jason had to get off for another call down at MD Anderson. So the question was, when are we planning on getting in the clinic? Our goal right now, our target goal is to still file an IND this year in some, if we can. And if the funding comes through, we'll be able to file an IND this year. So your target of February to start a clinical trial is realistic, absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question comes from Roger Iqbal. Please go ahead.
Sorry, we got dropped. Again, follow-up call with Joe. Joe, this clinical trials, I know it's going to be February or March if the things go all right. And again, depends upon the investment. So before that, what is your immediate plan, Joe? I just want to know. Today is what? Today is almost end of the August. There are what, September, October, November, and December. And November and December, I will say, go. What is your immediate plan for next 4 months, right, or till January?
Well, the only things that we can do, which is why we partnered with Dr. Naveen and company, which is for remote monitoring. You got to look at it like this. Most of our clinics in Arizona are seeing very limited patients, if any patients at all. It's like that all around the country. Look at our Excelligen product. That's ready to go. We got a federal award from, the whole VA system, and they're not open. So the only thing that we can do is look for opportunities based upon the backbones we have. And those backbones are doctors. Those backbones are patient populations. Those backbones are our platform technology, infectious disease, and cancer, and work in the areas that right now are the only areas that we're able to work in. So we're adopting the business. That's why we're getting into remote monitoring. Of course, we have the patients and we have the doctors that can help further this business. And they're looking for new revenue streams, which this platform we're building affords them. So, again, we're just like every other company out there. We're right now adapting to the pandemic situation. We are trying to move forward with the businesses that are very difficult to move forward with, not because of us, but because of the situation. And we're looking and picking our spots, like the vaccine work, so we can do something to further not only our business, but to add value in the stock.
So basically, you are thinking about the non-vaccine moving parts. You want to move them forward where you can generate the revenue. Is that correct?
No, well, we're working on the vaccine, and that we're committed to. Right now, like I said, we signed an LOI with the diagnostic company that we believe has one of the better systems for COVID testing, which is much demand and much need here in the United States, as well as other things that we can adapt our business to what's going on in the country today. So we're doing the necessary things to expand the business, keep going with the existing businesses, which are limited, as well as looking for new opportunities that exist today because of what's going on.
Sure. Have you, Jim, Joe, this is my suggestion. Basically, it came out of my mind because have you thought, since you have a great data, last, I would say, 8-9 years of a data, have you thought about using the data as a tool? Because data is the tool today which most of the people want, Whether do you have any plans of building some kind of a SaaS application, putting it there, having some, and it will not take that much of time.
Well, I mean, right now with Dr. Naveen's technologies, which is the remote monitoring system, we plan on, and we're talking to an EMR company where we can integrate EMR into that system, as well as telemedicine. We're talking to another company to partner with them for a telemedicine add-on. So, yes, we're looking at right now what's going on environmentally in the U.S., where our assets are, like our doctors and our networks and our patient populations, and being able to make new offerings, modify them, make them better, and then be able to offer them through those distribution channels where we can start getting revenue in and taking advantage of the situation that's going on now globally.
Sure. No, absolutely. See, today, most of these systems which are being created, what I see as for the technology point of view, they are still not centralized. What I mean by centralized is like this. If there's a patient A, he has in COVID, now he's after 14 days or after 3 weeks, he started traveling, okay? He's going from point A to point B. At point B, if they are doing testing, they don't know this patient had COVID six weeks back. It's kind of, more of a centralized data sharing, you know, building an ecosystem around it. It will protect everyone. Having that kind of visibility.
Yeah, I mean, I think companies, there are some pretty big companies that are working on that right now. It is a problem. Obviously, the testing really creates this problem because, you know, if it takes 5 days, 6 days, 7 days to get results back, and you're not staying at home and you're not quarantining, you know, how many people have you touched, during that time, and how are we controlling the spread? So, it's an area that's interesting, but, you know, we have nothing on the horizon in that area. That's just cool.
Okay. Sure. Thanks for the response, Joe. I send you my LinkedIn message also. Please check it. And I might have more suggestions.
Thanks.
I send you my LinkedIn connection.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you very much. Yes.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Joe. All the best for the company. Yeah, thanks for the call.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
And next, we have Scott May. Your line is open.
Hey again, Joe. I was wondering if the New Gen Health guys are still on the line, if they could maybe take a little deeper dive onto specifically, has the system been rolled out previously, or would the Arizona rollout kind of be the initial rollout, and how complex is this thing to implement and get up and running as far as getting patients involved and you know, ultimately seeing revenues?
Well, I'll turn it over to Dr. Naveen shortly, and then Sanjay, of course, because he's our team leader in bringing this to our distribution channel. So for me, this system is probably one of the best I've seen. The way it works is there's an app for the patient. There's a portal for the doctors. All the billing codes are built into the system for the doctors' easy use, seamless use. The doctor sees the patient, and now because of COVID especially, and pricing that Medicare is paying for remote monitoring has gone through the roof because of the situation with COVID. The doctor then has a supply of monitoring diagnostic tools that come in a box. So if a patient needs 4 or 5 different types of monitoring, it's all Bluetooth, hooks into the phone, and then the data goes into the portal, which then, Medicaid and Medicare are paying substantially for that monitoring of that patient's life. So, our backbones are already built through our doctor networks. It's their patients that we'd be servicing with their doctors providing the education we providing the education to the doctors and the staff, Dr. Naveen's company. And maybe Dr. Naveen, you'd like to maybe add a little bit of color as to, you know, all the great work you've done in putting together this system. And I know that you have patients loaded on yours. Dr. Naveen, you still with us?
Is the system currently in use, Joe, or is this kind of a maiden voyage?
Oh, no, the system is in use. There's about 20 different diagnostic products. They're all manufactured quality. There are about 1,000 patients right now, I believe, on the system. Sanjay, maybe you can add some color to that?
Yeah. There are about 1,000 people on the system currently. But we are going to roll it out. The only hurdle we are facing is getting the devices because all the companies that manufacture the devices were shut down because of the COVID situation. So they reopened, the company reopens, I think, somewhere in July, and they are backlogged in supplying us. So maximum 4 to 6 weeks lag time, that's what we have, and we should be that's the maximum 6 weeks we should be operational in Arizona at least.
And so how many of those 50,000 patients would you envision using this?
I am envisioning in the next 6 months at a very conservative estimate is about 5,000. 5,000 will be the top two or three companies in the country. Maybe five. I don't know, but I haven't seen any company, to the best of my knowledge, have more than a couple of thousand patients in the system. So the 5,000 patients, we will be one of the biggest ones. And that's a very conservative estimate. Another thing, we are under letters of confidentiality, and I can just give you a brief hint on it. We'll be the only company that is going to partner with the EMR company where we will be our portal will be directly linked with the EMR, and that company itself has about 2,000 providers which will be joining our network very soon. But that we are under negotiations, and hopefully Joe will have some good news in the next couple of weeks about that.
Yeah, I mean, you have to understand, we look at all of the remote monitoring companies. None of them have the quality diagnostic products that patients use at home. None of them have the seamless integration of all the necessary things a doctor and a patient needs. But the big thing is none of them have what we have, which is big patient populations and doctor partners. So, you know, if you have the doctors, you know, you get their patients, and it's a new revenue stream for them. For sure, they're going to love the patients, and the ultimate thing that's going to occur then is that they're going to be able to take care of their patients better and more safer under what's going on today with COVID. And you know, I know we had a caller earlier say that COVID's going away. My belief is COVID is not going away. COVID is going to be here a very long time. And, you know, again, I need to see long-term memory in the vaccines that are being developed right now. And none of them are announcing any of that. And, you know, if it's going to be handled like a flu type of thing where you constantly got to get vaccinated, you know, it's not going away. So...
this sounds like a fantastic and timely opportunity. I guess my last quick thing would be, what's the time frame from when you get somebody enrolled in the system to when there's money in the bank going through the Medicare, Medicaid system, and you know, what's the revenue timeline?
Currently, Medicare is paying in 30 days. Usually, they pay 15 days, but because of the COVID situation, Medicare is paying in 30 days. So money is in the bank, maybe 35, 40 days at the very most.
So if we get devices in hand in 4 to 6 weeks and start getting this out, we could be looking at revenues within three months from this.
No, much. Awesome. I would say earlier than that. In 6 weeks, we and add another 30 days to it. You're correct, yeah. About 2.5-3 months, yeah.
That would be fantastic. Great. Thank you for the info, guys.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you very much for the call, Scott.
And it does appear that there are no further questions over the phone at this time. I would like to turn it back to the speakers for any closing remarks.
Well, I'd just like to thank everybody for listening today. We want to wish everybody well and to take care of themselves and for sure to, follow all the CDC guidelines and protecting themselves and their families and controlling the spread of the horrible affliction we now have, COVID. So I want to thank you all, and we will be in touch and hopefully be able to do this again next month. And we're looking forward to closing some of these great things that we have on the table that we're working very hard legally to get done. So thank you all, and much appreciated for everybody getting on today. Thank you.